Today's shir is for Eschus, for Shalom ben Brocham, for Refuah Shleima. Today's shir is Masechet Ksubos, Daf Nun Aleph. We will begin on Daf Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph, at the top of Amud, the second line from the top. Says the Gemara, Hu Yosem v'Yosema, they were a brother and a sister, that father had passed away, and there was an apotropos, there was an administrator who was responsible for their the metatlon of their father until they became adults. Dosla kameid the Rava, and they came to Rava with the request that this Yosoima needs to be supported. Amalu Rava, so Rava said, "Hello Yosem b'shvil Yosoima, give enough support to the Yosem that there should be enough for his sister as well." Amalu Rabban la Rava. Haven't you said that only Makarki could be used for support? Bein l'mezayne, to support the daughters. Bein l'ksuba, to pay off the woman ksuba. Or bein l'panosa, or whether we're speaking about a question of panosa, of support, of marrying off the daughters, giving her under dunya. So the question was, how are you suggesting that metatlin should be used for that purpose? Amalu, so Rava responded, the reason I said this halacha is not because I hold that the daughter is entitled to collect from metatlin. But the reason I said this was, Ila rotza shifchel shamshay, if this Yosem would have wanted a woman to take care of him, Milo Yavinale, wouldn't we have supported him with that? Isn't that something that he needs to have? Koshkein, so certainly when we tell him to support his sister, he has a double benefit. He's going to have someone to take care of him. And he's also going to have a situation that his sister will be taking care of him. And therefore, says the Nuka Yosef, that Rava was well aware that this was a situation that this is a person who wants someone to take care of him. And if he wants someone to take care of him, the best should be a sister, because like that he'll also be able to support a sister. The Meiri seems to take a different approach. He says that even if the brother has someone to take care of him, so the reason that Rava is suggesting that the sister will take care of her brother doesn't apply. Still, says the Meiri, the brother is anxious to see that his sister should be taken care of. And since he wants to see his sister's taken care of, he's prepared even to give up from the metatlin. So in other words, there's an interesting machloikis here between the Meiri and the Nemuka Yosef. It seems from the Nemuka Yosef's explanation that the only time we would entertain requiring him to support from the sister is in a case where the sister is going to be taking care of him. If the sister will not be taking care of him, then this halacha will not apply. It seems from the Nemuka Yosef, even if she's not taking care, he should get supported. Which are called karka. The reason they're called, why real estate is always called nechasim sheshlam achrayis, is because even if somebody doesn't have any more the liquid assets to pay off his debts, but if he owned real estate at the time that he incurred that debt, well, we're going to be speaking about the sugya quite extensively still, those assets remain obligated to the debt. So it says the Brais Ech Nechosim Shesh Lamachrayis, Vech Nechosim Shehen Lamachrayis, Metatlin, Metzin Lamazoy and Isha Labanas are all used to support the wife and the daughters, Divri Rebbe. Shimon Alozheimer, Nechosim Shesh Lamachrayis, real estate, Metzin Labanas is indeed used to support the daughters, whether it's for support or whether it's for Panosa, which means to give them the Dunya. Menabonim. Labanos menabanos continues the brisa. We take from the older daughters for the younger daughters. Labanim ben ben mabanim, and we take for the younger sons from the older sons. In other words, if older sons or the older daughters took something, we redistribute that the younger sons and younger daughters should get it. And the Minabonis bin the Chasim Rubim, if the father left enough support for the sons and the daughters, that the halacha is that all the assets go to the sons who are the Yarshim, and the halacha is that if the daughters took hold of them, we take that away from them and give it back to the sons. Avloy lebanim and abanos, but we don't take away from the girls who took seized the assets. But nechasim atim. In the case with a nechasim atim, so then the girls have first rights to those nechasim to be used for support. And if the girl and the boys have no rights to it, and if the girls took them, they keep them. What is considered nechasim merubim and nechasim atim? It's a machloikus. Some say it's enough that there should be support for the daughters until they become, there's enough for support for all of them until they become boigers, until they become 12 and a half years old. And some say support for 12 months. Continues the Braisa. Nechasim she'en l'mechrayis, metatlin, metzin me'bonim me'abonis, if me'abonim, le'bonim me'abonim, if the older brothers took hold of all the metatlin, we take them away to give the younger brothers. Le'bonis me'abonis, if all the metatlin were taken by the older daughters, they're taken away to support the younger daughters. Lebonim min abonos, if the older daughters took hold of the metatlin, which they had for their mezonos, the halacha is that we take it away from them for the bonim. Ava loy lebonis min abonim, if the take, we don't take penosa for the bonos for metatlin. So if the bonim have the metatlin, we don't take them away to give to the bonus. Says the Gemara. Afgav of the Kaimelon, even though we have a rule in the whole Shas, that loch Rebbe mechavei roi, that we follow the opinion of Rebbe when he's arguing against another person, hacha loch of Shimon ben Elazar. In our Gemara, the loch is like Rav Shimon ben Elazar. The Amar Rava Hilchasa Mimakarkiv Lemotatli, the loch is that we take from real estate, not from a tartan, Bain Liksuba, whether it's coming to collect the Ksuba, Bain Lemazone, whether it's coming to collect the support of the daughters, or Bain Lepanosa, or whether it's coming from the Dunya, all of these are only taken from real estate, not from a tartan. But in Mitzvah Shem, we will be discussing that Taisva says there's a takonas hagoinim that says that we should take bismanaza everything, even for a metatlin. Says the Mishnah, lekos leksuba. If a man did not write a ksuba for his wife, and as the Rishonim point out, that even though we've discussed previously in our Masechta, there were different minhagim. In some places they wrote a ksuba, in some places they didn't write a ksuba. Our Mishnah is teaching us that even if you live in a place where the minig is to write a ksuba, but for some reason the ksuba wasn't written, the halacha is she's still entitled to the rights that a woman gets in the ksuba. And the halacha will be, Basula gav masayim, a psula will get masayim as a ksuba, and amana will get amana. Vneshu tanai bezdin, that is a rule the Besdin instituted, that every woman is entitled to a ksuba. Kosov law, if the husband wrote to a ksuba, saw the shavamana, he wrote a ksuba for his wife, that a field that he put up that's only worth a mana, tachs m'saim zos, and he says, this field that's worth a mana should be the ksuba for you, even though a woman, a psula, as we know, just learned, is entitled to 100 zos, for the cost of law. Or furthermore, he didn't write in the ksuba, kol nechosum de isli, all of my assets, achroi l'ksubasaych, are to be held mortgaged to ksuba, chayiv, under all circumstances, he's chayiv, shutunai bazdin. So it's very interesting. The Mishnah keeps on using the word shutunai bezdin, which would seem to indicate that our Mishnah's opinion is that a ksuba is a drabbanon. But we've had a discussion if ksuba is drabbanon or deraisa. Ramey's opinion actually is that ksuba is deraisa. So how do we understand the wording of a Mishnah? So the Melach HaShleim explains that Tanai Bezdin doesn't refer to all the halachas of our Mishnah. The halacha that almana gets almana, everybody agrees that is only a derabbanan. Furthermore, he wants to suggest that even Rameyer, who holds that the chiv of a ksuba is a deraisa, that's only on the concept. The concept of ksuba is that ksuba is a deraisa, but all of the details of the ksuba, the halacha is only derabbanan. So our Mishnah spoke about where somebody put up a asset field that's worth 100 instead of the 200 which she's entitled to. So the Zemachoikos Rishonim had to understand what meant here. That, in other words, one pshat is that he was only interested in giving her a mana, and therefore that's unacceptable because he's supposed to give 200. Some say that he certainly was agreeable that to give her the Messiah, but the asset that he put up was worth only a mana. Furthermore, that the Rishonim point out that now that we've learned, that doesn't make a difference what he does. Under all circumstances, he has to give her a psul, he has to give a Messiah, and a mana, he has to give a mana. So what was the need to teach us the first din of the Mishnah? So I saw that the Rishonim point out that our Mishnah is coming to teach us, the first Mishnah teaches us the basic halacha, that you have to give a Masayim to Psula and a Mana to Almana. And then the Mishnah goes on to say that even if you went ahead to write that apoitiki, that you mortgage a specific field, it all doesn't make a difference. Furthermore, the Mishnah said, if he didn't put up all of his asset for the ksuba, it doesn't make a difference. They're all mortgaged. That, however, Tosfos discusses, our Mishnah is speaking about a case where he only put up a field which is worth a mana for the ksuba, which is Messiah. But what would happen if somebody put up a property which is worth Messiah for a ksuba, which is worth Messiah? What will be the halacha then? Can he make an argument? I put up a proper piece of mortgaged property. It's equal to the value of your ksuba. And therefore, Tosfos says that under those cases, the halacha is that that mortgage will be effective because he gave her what he's supposed to give her. Says the Mishnah further. Loi kosovlo, if he did not include in the ksuba, im deshtaboi, if you will be kidnapped, afrikinach vasivnach leili into, I will ransom you and take you back for your wife, or be kahenis, if a kahenis. So we, as we discussed many times in our shiurim, a kahenis, the wife of a kahenis, even if she was violated, the halacha is that she may not go back to her husband, the Kohen. And we also have learned many times that a woman who's captive, Chazal assume that she was violated. And therefore, as soon as a woman was captive, the halacha is that she can't go back to her husband. But, says the husband, the Kohen, but says the Mishnah, if he didn't write into the ksuba, I'll let you go back to your country, to your father. I can't take you back, but I will make sure that you get back to your family. And as the Miri points out, it becomes his responsibility to get her back, chayiv. Again, these are all part of his obligations because Shutanai Bezdin, that this is what a husband has to do in on behalf of his wife. Tosfos is clearly teaching us that the woman, the Kohen's wife, who's kidnapped, the husband has to ransom. But the Gemara doesn't discuss what will be halacha regarding paying her the ksuba The Gemara Masechet Nedarim has a question if she's entitled to the ksuba pain. Nishbas, if the wife is kidnapped, chayev levdoisoi, the halacha is he has to ransom him. Vim Omar, and he says, Hare gita ksubasa. If he tells her, I'll pay you out, I'm giving you a divorce. Of course, this is only in a world where a husband can divorce a wife without her consent. And I'm paying you out your ksuba. And now do whatever you want with the tiftas atma. You've gotten your ksuba money. You could use it to ransom yourself. The halacha is ein rishoy. A husband has no right to do so, because he was previously already obligated to ransom her. And once he's obligated to ransom her, he can't obviate that obligation. However, loksa, if she became ill, chayev l'rposa, he has to take care of her medical bills. Omar, and if he says, Hare gita ksubasa, if he says, here's your get, and here's your ksuba, and use the proceeds of a terapis atma to take care of yourself, that Rishoy, he has a right to do so. So many Rishoyim in the Shita discuss, that's interesting, the Mishnah uses the word loksa, not the word chalsa. Why does the Mishnah use the word loksa? Usually when the Mishnah speaks about somebody getting ill, chas v'shalom, it uses the word chalsa to teach us if she got loksa means she got sick, not because she chose to get sick. But if somebody, if she acted in an irresponsible manner and be acting in an irresponsible manner, that's how she got sick. The husband will not be obligated to support her. So the Sifri points out that if a man takes a fast toher, we know the Torah speaks about Pashas Kisetze, if he takes a woman, a Gentile captive, a Gentile woman as a captive, and his intention is marrying her, and then he decides not to marry her. So the Sifri teaches us that he can't send her home until he takes care of her, takes care of her medical bills. The Ravid says that certainly a Jewish wife should not be allowed to be divorced when she's ill unless her husband pays all of her medical expenses. So Sefer says, the Ravid, that the halacha of the Mishnah is only speaking about minor illnesses, which don't confine the wife to bed. But if one's wife is bedridden, says the Ravid, the husband can't just avoid his responsibility. The Rambam says that although it's inappropriate for a husband to divorce a sick wife, he has the right to do so even if she is severely ill. So the Magen Mishnah tries to understand why are we more machmer by a yifas toyer than by a wife. So he explains, when we speak about a fast toyer, we took a woman away from her country, and now we, with the intention of marrying her, and now you decided not to marry her, it's particularly cruel to send her away if she's not well. However, when we speak about a divorcee who's going to receive her ksuba payment, it's not the same situation. The Gra says that the drasha of the Sifri is only in a smachta. It's not a chiv deraisa. The Sifri is only teaching us proper behavior, says the Gra. It's proper that if you brought a woman to marry her and now she unfortunately gets sick, it's unethical just to send her away without taking care of her. Says the Marshal, as we alluded to, that b'zman hazeh, that we have the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, which prohibits a husband from divorcing his wife against her will. A sick wife has the option of refusing to accept the get, and therefore forcing her husband to continue paying her medical expenses. However, says the Mechelkes Mechoykik, says that even though Rabbeinu Gershom doesn't allow a man to divorce a wife against his will, but if the husband says that he wants to divorce his wife and she's prepared to pay the ksuba, he's exempt from providing her needs any further. So Rav Moshe Negris Moshe speaks about a case of a woman who wanted to get divorced because her husband got sick and she doesn't want to live with her husband with that illness. Says Rav Moshe, even though there may be grounds to compel the husband to give a get, because it's difficult for his wife to live with him, says Reb Moshe, based on the Sifri, and based on everything that we've been explaining around that Sifri, that it's just like it's unethical for a man to abandon his wife when she's sick, it's also unethical for a wife to abandon her husband when he is sick, and she should be with him and take care of him until she could be fine. So the Mishnah spoke about this case of giving the get, and he tells her to rapis atzmai, says Rashi, because once she's divorced, he doesn't have any more obligations to her. Says the Rama, why is this any different than the previous case? In the previous case, where she got kidnapped, he doesn't have a right to say so. So Rav says, the Rama explains, that the moment she gets kidnapped, at that moment, he has an obligation to take care of her. He can't say that, well, I'll divorce her, because his obligation already kicked in. Whereas in the case where she got sick, every day is a new situation. And since every day is a new situation, so I'm taking care of you today and I'm divorcing you today, and then tomorrow, the halacha is you will be divorced and you take care of yourself. The Ravid points out that this is only that even the Ravid says that even though we're allowing him to divorce her and then she should take care of herself, that's only in a situation where she could, even though she's sick, he divorces her, she could take care of herself. But if she's in such a situation where she can't take care of herself, so going back to what we've been discussing, the halacha is that under such circumstances, he can't divorce her because he can't leave her without anything. Our Mishnah also discussed, as we've learned many times, that if a wife is kidnapped, it becomes the obligation of the husband to free her. There's a very interesting discussion in the Achronim. What happens if the wife did something that caused her to she should be kidnapped? Does the husband still have the obligation to divorce to ransom her, or could the husband say that I only took on this obligation because that's something the husband has to do for his wife, but not in a situation that she created the situation? And it's a big machlokes achronim. I really saw three opinions in the achronim. One opinion in the achronim is that it's that he is obligated. The Pesachei Tshuva quotes those opinions. There's another opinion that since she did it for herself, why should he have to support her? Why should he have to ransom her? And a third opinion I saw is that it depends, that the first time, even if it's at her fault, he would have to ransom her, but if she continues doing so, then he's not obligated to do so. And the same question I saw the Achronim discuss is if she acted in an irresponsible manner. If she acted in an irresponsible manner and she got sick, can the husband say yes? As we've been learning, the husband has an obligation to take care of his wife's medical bills, but maybe only in a situation where she never got sick, but not when she caused it. And like we mentioned, the Shita says that that's why the Mishnah used the word laksa. However, again, the Achronim seem to take the approach, certainly if she got, the first time she got sick, the husband would have to take care of her, because if not, then every time the husband could say, it's her fault that she got kidnapped. Every time the husband could say, it's her fault that she got sick. And if that's going to be the case, then he'll never have to pay, which of course is not what Chazal wanted. And therefore, the halacha is that he should have to pay. Says the Gemara, we're going to learn in the Mitzvah Shem, on the Afnun Dalar Mavdal Beis, Machloikus Remain Rabbi Yehuda, if a woman could tell her husband, you don't have to pay me my whole ksuba amount. So says the Gemara, Mani, Who is the Tanya, Tanava Mishnah Remehi? Domer, Kol HaPoichs L'Psula M'Masayim. If somebody deducts from his Kala, who's a Psula from the Masayim, or Mona Mona, or he deducts from the Amona, his wife, Amona, Hareza Bila's Nus. It's as if they had relations to that is Nus, because every husband is obligated to give his wife a full-fledged ksuba. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, because if we're going to want to suggest that our Mishnah is following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a rotza, if somebody wants to deduct from his wife the ksuba obligation, he'll write her a ksuba of Masayim, vik service, and she'll write back a receipt, hiskabalti mechamena, I got from you already a mana, and even though she didn't get it, but this husband is now holding on to that receipt. Or, in the case of Almona, he'll give her a ksuba of Almona, and she'll hold on to this receipt that says, I gave you back, that I got Chamishim Zuz of it already. So even though she didn't get it, this is a way for the husband to avoid paying the entire amount that the ksuba of the ksuba. So how you see that the amount of Masayim or Mana is not a hard and fast amount. Ask the Gemara. So the Mishnah that insists that the ksuba of a psula must be Masayim, that the ksuba of a Mana must be a Mana, seems to be following the opinion of Rameyim. But ask the Gemara, Ema Seifa, let's continue learning the Mishnah. We learned in the Mishnah, Kosel, Lasad Shavaz Mana Tach Masayim Zuz. If he wrote that he put up a field that's only worth the mana for ksuba, which is worth masaimzos, or he didn't write that all my assets are mortgaged to the ksuba chayiv. All of these assets are anyway mortgaged should tanai bezdin, that because that's the rule of ksuba. Whose opinion is that? Asin Rabbi Yehuda, Dama Achray Taya Sefer, as we mentioned earlier. There's a fundamental machloikis throughout Shas. If a transaction is recorded in a document, and it doesn't say in that transaction that all of my assets are mortgaged to the loan, if what is the halacha? Are they mortgaged anyway? And the halacha is that they are mortgaged. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda holds that even if it's not written in the shtar, the halacha is that it's as if it's written. So when it says in our Mishnah that even though he didn't put into the shtar that all of my assets are obligated, then the assets are anyway obligated. That's the opinion of Yehuda. The Rabbi Yehuda Amachrayis Lav Taisus Soifahu. And if somebody doesn't write it in, the halacha is that it's meant deliberately not to put it up. So how could our Mishnah be following the opinion, that's the opinion of Rameya. Our Mishnah that says that even if it's not written, they're all mortgaged, is following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanan. And the Mishnah, the Gemara quotes, where do we have this Machloikus Rameya and Rabbi Yehuda? Says the Gemara, the Tanan, Matzah Shtar Chayiv, if you found a document, Im Yesh Ben Achrayis, if in the shtar it says that all of my assets are mortgaged to this document, lo yachzer. The halacha is that if this document was found in the street, we don't give the document back to the loiva, nay shebezdin the from him. What we're concerned is as follows. The loiva paid back the malva. Once the loiva paid back the malva, the halacha is that once the loiva paid back the malva, the malva returns the shtar to the loiva. But what happened in this case is the shtar is now found in the street. We don't know who is the one that dropped the shtar. Was the malva the one that dropped the shtar? Was the loiva the one that dropped the shtar? What is the nafka mina? Obviously, if the malva dropped the shtar, we give back the shtar to the malva, and he could collect his debt. If the loiva is the one that dropped the shtar, we give back the shtar to the loiva, and the malva can't collect his debt. So our Gemara speaks about a case, that Mishnah speaks about a case where he said that the loiva says it's the malva who dropped the shtar. So we would think that if the loiva is saying that the malva dropped the shtar, he should give back the shtar to the malva. But we have to think for a moment. Maybe the loiva and the malva colluded. And what the loiva said to the malva, I'll say that the shtar is still yours. I'm going to say that the shtar is still yours. I have no assets. So when you're going to come to collect from me, I won't be able to pay you. Where will you go? You'll go to any property that I have that's mortgaged. You'll take that property to pay off the debt. And then we'll divide the proceeds. So that law is that we won't give back the shtar. Unless we know for sure that the malva deserves to have the shtar, we can't give back the shtar to the malva because we're concerned to Bezdin from him, the Bezdin is going to go after that. That's only if it's written into the shtar that all of his assets are mortgaged. But if that clause is not in the shtar, then yachser. We don't have to worry about to protect the people who bought those assets. Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda v'chama imrim, echadzeh, whether the shtar has this clause or doesn't have this clause, lo yachser, we can't give back the shtar to the malva, should bezdin nefrom him. And therefore, even though the clause that all the assets are mortgaged are not there, it doesn't make a difference. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda is the opinion that even though it doesn't have that in the shtar, the halacha is as if it's in the shtar. That's what our Mishnah said, that even if it doesn't say in the ksuba that everything is put up, it's considered mortgaged, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So now we have a question, says the Gemara, Reish Rameya v'sefer Rabbi Yehuda, that the only way to seemingly be able to understand our Mishnah is that the Reish is following the opinion of Rameya and the Sefer is following the opinion of Yehuda, which is, of course, difficult to explain. And even though explained the Rishonim, it doesn't say in that Mishnah that the Chacham Rabbi Yehuda, but throughout Shas, who is the man, the Amr, that always argues with Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda? Or I saw another pshat that if it says Chachamim, it means everybody disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda, with Rabbi Meir. And clearly Rabbi Yehuda was in the group of those individuals. And if you want to give an answer, that our Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Meir. And even though Rabbi Meir normally holds that Achrayis laf toy cipher, and if the clause of the mortgage is not in the shtar, we can't make believe that it was a mistake. It means it was deliberately omitted. Shani le Ramey is going to differentiate ben ksuba l'shtar, between the ksuba and all other documents. Ask the Gemara, umi shanale, is that true that Ramey differentiates? V'tanya we learned in the Braisa, chamisha goyvim and chavurim, five individuals who have a claim, how only could claim from assets from whom they're claiming their obligation with, from the assets that he has liquid assets, but not from anything else. Elaim Paris or Shvach Paris. Somebody stole a field and sold that field to someone else. And that person who purchased the field worked on the field and it grew fruit, or he improved the field. And the person from whom the field was stolen comes to collect back whatever takes the field. It's his field. Now the victim who bought that stolen property goes back to the Goslin, and he could take back whatever he spent, whatever he cost him to buy that field from the Goslin. And if the Goslin doesn't have money, he goes to any property that the Goslin had, even the Goslin sold it, to collect that payment. However, the improvements that he put into the field, he could only take from the Goslin's liquid assets. Hamakabel of Lozon has ben ishtoy, bas ishtoy, somebody who undertook to support his wife's children that she had from a previous marriage. The aloch is here too. He only has a right. They only claim that they have are from liquid assets. v'get shem b'achrayis, a get that doesn't have written to it the clause of achrayis nechasim, v'ksuvas isha she'em b'achrayis. So we see right away that this b'raisa speaks about a ksuba that doesn't have this clause in it, and is recognized that if it's missing the clause, we don't act on that clause. Now says the Gemara, who must be the Tana of that b'raisa? Man Shamtle, who's the Tana that we've been learning in our Shia that holds the Chrayis Lav Toiv Soifahu? And if the Chrayis clause is missing, it's deliberate. It's the opinion of Meir. Victani, and we see that he follows that opinion even by a Ksubas Isha. Answers the Gemara, Ibais Ema. We could still explain our entire Mishnah follows the opinion of Rameya. Vibai same Rabbi Yehuda, and we have a way of explaining that the entire Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Vibai same Rabbi Yehuda, we could explain that the entire Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Hasam, that where did Rabbi Yehuda say that somebody could tell his right to ksubit his wife 200, 100, and take back from her a receipt as if he paid off part of it? That's only in a case, Kosovlois Gabalti, that she wrote that receipt. Hocha, but in our Mishnah, when she didn't write this Gabalti, just to say that she accepted that upon herself, that's not halachically acceptable. Vibai say Rameya. Furthermore, we could explain the entire Mishnah follows the opinion of Rameya. Ma'a chayv diktani, when the Mishnah said that even if he didn't write that all of his assets are Meshubba to the Ksuba, the halach is they all are, that's only what assets was he referring to, Menemachrorim, liquid assets. And then we learned in the Mishnah, if he didn't write in the Ksuba that if you're kidnapped, I will ransom you and take you back, and by Kahanis, the halach is, he didn't write that if you're kidnapped, I'll free you and send you home, he's still obligated to do so. Amar Avud Shmuel, Eish Yisrael Shenensa, if a Jewish woman was violated, asur labala, she becomes prohibited to live with her husband. For chashinan, we need to be concerned. Shemet chilasa ba'aynis v'saifa baratzen. Maybe she be started as an aynis, and as we learned in earlier in our shir, the halach is a woman who's violated is mut of a woman who's violated. Basically, Yisrael is allowed to go back to her husband, but here we need to be concerned that maybe it started off that way, but Seifer was done Baratzen. And it was Baratzen, even Eishes Yisrael would be also to go back to her husband. So the Pnei Yeshua asks, why would the Avud Shmuel have this concern? Every Jewish girl has a Cheskes Kashrus. So why would I think that a Jewish girl acted this way? So the Pnei Yeshua answers that the basis of Avud Shmuel is that most women are in that type of, fall into that category of Tchilasa Ba'aynis of Seif Baratzen. And a Chazaka doesn't work against a Roiv. And here, there's a Roiv. Tysus asks, if this is the case, why was Esther allowed to go back to Mordechai? Esther had relations with Achashverosh, and now you're saying that everybody's Tchilosoi Bainus and Seifer Baratzen. So Tosfos answers that when a woman is like Esther Amalka, who was a Tzedekis Gemura, then of course Avud Shmuel's ruling doesn't apply. Eisei Rav Avud Shmuel, Im Tishtaboy, it wrote, every ksuba is written, that if you will be kidnapped, after kinach, I will ransom you, v'sivnach loch le'intum, and I will take you back to be my wife. But if we always need to be concerned, ask the Gemara, that she is tchilasa ba'aynis v'saif baratzen, how do we write that in the ksuba? Ishtik. So Avud Shmuel remained quiet. Kar Rav Alei of Avud Shmuel, so Rav said about him, Somru sorrow otzer v'milim, the Pasuk in Eve says that great people were held back from being able to say anything. The kaf yisum lezim p'yem. And they put something over their mouth. They weren't able to respond. Says the Gemara, obviously, you know a good teretz he could have given. So ask the Gemara, my islay lameimer, what should have he answered? Says the Gemara, he should have answered the b'shvuya kilu. Our Gemara, our Mishnah is talking about a shvuya. A shvuya is a whole different situation. Because when we speak about a shvuya, so there, we don't know for sure that she did anything wrong. So the way I saw the Mefarshim explain, it's a sfek sfeika. It's a suffix if she did something, if she had relations and she didn't have relations. And even if she had relations, Avud Shmuel says we need to be concerned, chashinen, we need to be concerned there was tchilasa ba'oynes v'saifa baratzen. But we're not certain that that was the case, and that's why here we could be makel. So ask the Gemara, the Torah speaks about a wife of Yisrael that was violated, could go back to her husband. However, according to Avud Shmuel, Oynes Tashai Rechmano, Heichem Mishkach Salah, in every case, we should have to be concerned that it's Tchilas Abayinus V'Saifa Baratzen. Answers, the Gemara is talking about a case, Kegoyin the Kamer Edim, there were Edim that were able to say, Shetzofchem Tchil V'Saif. We saw what happened, and therefore, since we saw what happened, that's why, and we know that she was protesting the entire time, that's why we know it's not a problem. Why doesn't the Gemara give the teretz that we just said before, that Esther, we know, is a tzedekes gemura, and maybe the Torah was speaking about a tzedekes gemura. So the Mitzvah Esim says that the Torah doesn't differentiate when it says this rule between a tzedekes gemura and someone who's not a tzedekes gemura. So it's difficult for us to say that there is such a distinction. Moreover, he said, the Maram Shif says that most women are not tzedekes gemura, so it's hard to use that as the explanation of the Gemara. Says the Gemara, Pligi de Rava, what Avud Shmuel said is contrary to what Rava said. Amar Rava, if it starts with a situation of oynis and then it devolves into a situation of rotzen, even if this woman says to the people who are coming to save her, leave him, if he wouldn't have done this to me, I would have hired him to do it. But Teres, she's allowed to go back to her husband. My Tama, but she's saying such a terrible thing that she's willingly having relations with this man, it's only because Yetzer Albusha. In the heat of the moment when she had relations with him, that's when this happened. Tanya Kavase the Reva, the Torah speaks in the parish of Soita regarding a woman who had relations with another man, an Ashish. The Pasuk says, Vihila in this, it wasn't done because she was violated. That's when Asura, that's when she's not allowed to go back to her husband. Hanispasa, if she was violated, Muteres, she would be allowed to go back to her husband. Yeshlach Acheres, and there could be even a case, continues the Braisa, that Abishlai Nispasa, that even though she wasn't violated, Muteres, she could go back to her husband. Vezuzu, who is that woman? Kosht Chilas Ba'onis V'Saifa Baratzon. Tanya Idach, continues the Gemara, V'hilo Nispasa, if she wasn't violated, Asura, her Nispasa, if she was, if she wasn't violated, she did it willingly, she may not go back to her husband. Her Nispasa, if she was violated, Materis, she may go back to her husband. V'yeshla Chars, Shapi Shinispasa, that even though it was a case of being violated, Asura, she would not be allowed to go back to her husband. And who was that? As we've been discussing, Anashis Koyin. Anashis Koyin, even though she was violated, the halacha is she can't go back to her husband. Amar Yehuda Mishmu Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, V'hilo in this pesop, if she wasn't violated, she did it willingly, Asura, she may not go back to her husband. Hanis pesop, she did it willingly, Mutaris. V'yeshla Cheres, and there's another wife, Shabishlai Nispasa, she did it willingly, Mutaris. Ve'ezuzu, Zershe Kedusha Kedusha Taz, where the Kedushin was a Kedushin that turned out to not be a valid Kedushin. Shafila B'nah Merkava Ksefa, even if she has a child from her husband, Menesvay Lechasla, she's not considered married. And since she's not considered married, the halacha is, so she's not considered an Eishes Ish. She's not considered an Eishes Ish that had an inappropriate relations. All right, Yudah. Hani Nashi Dagan V'Gamvi. Women who were kidnapped, Shayin L'Gavrayu, may go back to the husband. Amalei Rabbanu Rav Yehuda, V'Koman Talai Nahama. We see how they treat them with great respect. They bring them food, so it's obvious that they're willingly having relations with them. Says the Gemara, even if they're acting that way, we know it's only Machem Seira, it's only they're afraid. We see that they hold on to their weapons for them. It's also Machem Seira. Says the Gemara, Vadei Shefkinu, if they were allowed to go back, Vazlan Mashayun, and even though the people who kidnapped them say you could go back to your husband, and they still willingly remain with their captors, then Asirin. Tanabonim, Shvuye Malchus, women who were kidnapped by the king, Harein Kishvuyin, they're considered anusis, and they're allowed to go back to their husband. Genuve Listus, but if they were kidnapped by bandits, Einan Kishvuyin, they're not considered like they're Shvuyin, and they're not allowed to go back to the husband. Ask the Gemara v'tanyevcha, but we've learned in a brisa just the opposite, that genuvei listos are mutares, and genuvei malchus are not mutares. Answers the Gemara malchus malchus lekasha. Hava malchus achashverish, that when Achashverish was a very prominent king, and therefore she has no interest in having relations with him. And when she had relations with him, it's certainly that was done because she was an anusa. Because she knows that he has no interest in marrying her. And since he knows she has no interest in marrying her, she looks at this just as a situation of rape. But Malchus ben Netzer, when you have a Malchus ben Netzer who wasn't so prominent, and she thinks he may be interested in marrying her, and she wants to be married to him. So that's when it's a situation of rotzen. Listus alislekesha. Hobe ben Netzer. By ben Netzer, she thinks he's going to marry her, and she wants to marry him. Hobe listen to Alma, who's an individual she's not interested in marrying, just a regular bandit. Ask the Gemara. So ben Netzer, asked the Gemara, Hasam Karli Melech. In the first brisa, he was called a Melech, and that was where we reconciled the difference between Ben Netzer and Achashverosh. And the second brisa, we call him a Listen. Answers the Gemara, it's all relative. In Gabe Achashverosh, if we compare Ben Netzer to Achashverosh, he's a Listen. When we compare Ben Netzer to Listen, the Alma, he was a much more prominent individual, and he's considered Melechut.